You missed it, Blazer. Okay.
Well, the good news for you is we did that kind of the video together, so that it absorbed your interviewing, if that makes sense. We basically filmed like a 40-minute interview, so it worked. So, hey, everyone, this is Brian Bailey here. I'm with Justin Blazer again. This is Links to College Golf, kind of behind the scenes. The really cool thing is I released our first video behind the scenes, and I've actually gotten a lot of people asking more questions about our conversation than our wonderful videos. So I figure we'll keep rolling with this. And again, just kind of see behind the scenes what we're talking about as we're trying to move this series forward. So, Blaze, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Just a little break here. I'm in the beautiful office that I'm not usually in. It's a little break from the lesson tea, but I'm here at work and excited to chat with you a little bit.
How hot is it down there today?
Here in sunny Florida, it's I think like 68.
Oh, man.
A little breezy. See, I got my long sleeve on.
I was going to wonder. You had your little jumper on there. I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
It's a cold 70 today. Oh, how do people live like this?
The hand warmers. If it goes below 60, we got to bring the hand warmers out.
That's right, in the parkas. Mm-hmm. I guess kind of so far we've released our first videos. I did kind of what the average college golfer looks like, or if you want to play college golf, what that looks like. And you just dropped the kind of the parent commandments, right? So, kind of my first release and kind of the feedback I've gotten from Fuel members was, number one, I didn't know there was that many opportunities to play college golf. And number two, I didn't know it was that competitive to play college golf.
Yes.
Correct.
No surprise there, huh?
Well, I think for a lot there are. I think when most people think college golf, they think of Division I. They think of the big, what they see on TV through football, basketball, that kind of thing. And they think those are their only opportunities. So seeing that there's other opportunities, and you can even speak to this, you played at Division III level, correct?
Yes. So I played basketball Division III level. Yeah.
Yeah. So there are definitely tons of opportunities out there that people don't know. But I think what's really cool is the competitiveness from each layer. What I found was fascinating when I was kind of running the numbers was that the All-American separate, right? No matter Division I, Division II, Division III, but the All-American kind of reached the just under All-American for the first layer, right? So Division I, you have the All-Americans, which are, they're 20 golfers. And then the next layer is kind of the really good golfers, but those were kind of the Division II All-Americans by scoring rate. So it was really cool that it kind of stepped down by level and how it kind of matched. Now, if you are shooting 100, you could play college golf if you went to the very right venue. There's about seven, eight teams in the country that would probably take you. Sure. You would have a chance to play. So there are those opportunities. But what you could really see, and again, inside a GameForge world, is the majority of athletes are either elite, basically shooting 72 to 76, or developing, or I mean advanced player, which is 76 to 80. And then kind of the Division II to Division III, kind of the higher programs, you're kind of getting that developing player that's going to shoot, low 80s to mid 80s. So really your spectrum is about 72 to 85 was really kind of the window of being able to play collegiate golf. Now, with that being said, there's a lot of players out there that shoot a lot of those numbers. So just because you shoot those numbers still doesn't mean you will go play college golf, but you do have the opportunity to play. And I think to me, that was the most staggering piece was I've coached at the high school level, coached at the Division III level, coached at the Division II level, coached at the Division I level. So I've pretty much kind of walked my way all the way through coaching team golf, and I can attest there's all different types of scores out there, and I can attest there's all different types of abilities. But I think the really cool part is that no matter where you are, from a junior in high school right now to maybe a ninth grader just starting, there are opportunities. Start setting some goal and start driving to what you want to become. There are opportunities.
Yeah. Can I pause here for a quick sec?
Yeah.
So we've got the range ball machine here and they're running that thing. I don't know if you can hear it on
I
your
can't hear
end.
it.
Okay. All
No,
right.
we're good.
Okay. It's
So,
pretty loud. That's why I
all
just
right.
making sure that wasn't too much.
So the beauty on the microphones back here, they have four different settings. You can actually set which way the actual sound is coming. And it can do omnidirectional, where it'll take everything in, or you can do single direction, where it only from your mouth to the actual mic.
Yeah, it looks like a little heart.
So that means it's single direction. So it is only the front part of the microphone is catching your voice, and the rest of the microphones go dead. So
Okay,
it does a
perfect.
really good job of knocking away noise. So for you inspiring podcasters out there, know your mics.
All right, little quick lesson there. Yeah, I mean, and based on what you said, I think it's really cool that there's a place for everybody, right? I think that's the big thing is no matter what you're shooting, there's a place for you. But when you hear a parent talking or you hear a kid talking and you're like, hey, they say, I want to play college golf, they're thinking one of those Power Five schools, right? And I think as reality sets in and you start to kind of see where those markers are and realistically where you should be targeting, I think that was eye-opening too when you had sent, I was watching your video, but also you sent me the breakdown of that. You know, because you have these kids that, you know, they got a 76 scoring average and they're like, yeah, you know, I want to play at University of Florida, or you know, they'll name an SEC or an ACC school. So I think to know where you are and then be able to target the right schools is really important, because if I'm shooting 76, that's my scoring average, and I'm sending emails out to Power Five schools, I'm kind of wasting my time. Whereas getting my foot in the door and saying, okay, I'm in that 76 average. Here's the schools that I should be targeting. Okay, which of these schools meet my academic requirements and what I'm looking for there, and that whole process. But being able to pinpoint, okay, I need to attack these schools, doesn't mean you still can't send stuff there, but you do need to be realistic and send those emails and get yourself out to the right people.
No, I agree. I think, again, being targeted where I'm at, I don't think I'm going backwards. So really understanding where I'm at, what are my progress goals? Because if I'm, in ninth grade and I'm averaging 76, is completely different than I'm a senior in high school shooting 76. Those are two different worlds,
Absolutely.
right? So where am I? What are my intentions? Where do I plan on going? And making good sound decisions as you're kind of going through that progress is really important. And I would say a lot of parents are delusional. I would say a lot of players are delusional, and that can be a strength.
Sure.
Don't get, well, not the parents being delusional, but the kid being delusional can be a strength, because that they won't allow constraints to stop them from trying to reach a goal, which is kind of what you want. But again, we've got to have a realistic behind the scenes person go, well, I love Florida, but Florida Tech's a really good school, or Florida, there's tons of them down in South Florida and so forth and so on. There's some really good schools. And I think where I think a lot of people are getting it wrong now is with the NCAA is dying. I hate to say it. NCAA is slowly dying. But with the new transfer rules, it's not, back in the olden days when I was coaching, you could really hurt a player when they try to transfer. You could cost them eligibility. You could cost them redshirt years. You could really hurt an athlete trying to move, which I always
Well,
thought was unfair.
just in general, back then, just even you transferring, whether, you know,
Yeah,
just because I
you're
want
gonna
to
sit a year.
transfer,
You're gonna sit a year.
but whether it's the coach trying to hurt me or just the fact that I have to sit a year because I'm trying to move up a level. Yeah, I mean, the transfer rules obviously make, you know, that the transfer portals, it's changed a lot of things.
So the beauty is there's not that constraint anymore.
So there's not that constraint. So now it's like, hey, like, okay, I've got a 74 scoring average. I get into a Division II program. I'm continuing to play well. And we've seen this, the kid at my former college, Virginia Wesleyan, played there for 1 year. I think he won the national championship Division III or was in second place. And then the next year he was at University of Kentucky in his home state. But because of his scoring average prior to that, he had no chance. And he wasn't playing in top level events, AJGAs, and some of the things that we've talked about in our previous meeting. But absolutely, you can definitely, the rules, I think, favor the player now, not the
Thank God.
programs.
Thank
Yeah.
God. There's a, you
Well,
know,
depends on which end you're on.
well, I look at it this way, especially, you know, when you're looking at football and basketball, like they are producing so much revenue. And it's been, you know, now granted, as a college team, I appreciated the revenue that football made because that revenue basically paid for our program. If not, a lot of Olympic programs would not exist. So I do love that communal part of the NCAA. However, the NCAA is really, I always say the NCAA is best at ready, fire, aim. Like they do so many knee-jerk reactions. They do so many things without second and third order thinking. And what hell, Tennessee and Virginia just blew them up with the name, image, and likeness. Like the
Yeah, I saw
NCAA,
that.
I hate to say it, the NCAA is dead. They that ruling right there just literally decapitated the NCAA, which I
Yeah.
don't really mind because I think the NCAA, yeah, they've done
They're
a
just
lot of
gonna,
bad
yeah, but they're
things.
just gonna mold. They're just gonna
Yeah,
mold. And
it'll turn
I mean,
into
it's
something
obviously
different.
a, yeah, it's a governing body that has to, I mean, we have to have a governing body. But
But
yeah, I mean,
the
back to your original
NCAA is
point,
its
man,
own,
like it's a player's
it's players'
paradise right
world right
now.
now.
Player's paradise for
But
sure.
I think the funny part is the danger of that as a player is when you jump from school to school for whatever reason, you got to be careful because you will kind of build a, you know, people jump for different reasons, but if you're jumping because the coach isn't playing me and they're not playing me at four different schools, sometimes there has to be some introspection.
Yeah, sure. I mean, but that's probably a whole nother podcast on,
That could be an introspection podcast.
I mean, I think really to stay on point there is, finding where you are, what schools I should be targeting, why am I targeting those schools, and then based on my series, as a parent, how can you be supportive of that? And I think, I mean, it's a big world out there. I mean, it's a lot to digest. It's a lot to do. And in my pot and in my series, or in my video episode there, I said, reach out to someone that can help you. Reach out to someone that's been there before. Reach out to a recruiting expert. But be very leery of listening to other parents, especially if they're competing with your kid.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, are you
Narratives
sure
are
they're telling you to
narratives.
do the right thing? So,
Narratives are narratives.
narrative.
Be careful. No, I loved your video. I sat through and yeah, I digested all that, and it was a lot of really good points. And it's a lot of stuff that as a college coach you really see, you know. And I loved your phrase, players play, coaches coach, parents parent. And that is really, you know, if as a parent, if you can provide that space where it's loving, unconditional, whether you shoot 66 or you shoot 96, that when they look at you know, you're not carnivorous, you're not eating them with stares or giving thumbs up and thumbs down on every shot or getting, you know, that kind of component. I to me, again, that was a, so to me, that was a home run. So I think out the gate, we were pretty strong. I think our videos kind of said, hey, here's what college golf looks like if you want to play. There are opportunities, and hey, parents, here's some things to think about. All right, what's the next video going to be, Blaze?
From a junior golf side, that's a tough one, man. I mean, it just depends. I mean, there's just so many angles we can go as a junior golfer. I think, personally, if I were listening to this podcast, I would probably say I'd want to know a little bit more in depth. I know you broke down the scoring averages, but I would like to break down, what about those stats? What about those stats need to be breaking down further? So in other words, yeah, I would want to know, all right, this is the scoring average I'm at. Okay, but what are some important stats about those levels? Like, is there something than that a Division One golfer, does better than a Division Two or Division Three golfer, breaking down maybe our game forge stats. That would be one thing.
All right.
Yeah, and then, are there any trends in there? Are there any trends of like, like I said, this player does, Division One player, their scrambling percentage is this versus the Division Three. So where do I separate myself?
Yeah.
That could be one part, right?
Yeah.
And then the other part I would probably say is of those stats, how do I measure those individually? And then how can I improve on those stats? Like,
Okay.
if it's, let's just say it's scrambling percentage, and then, maybe you can break down from a statistical point of view, here's where a Division One player is scoring average. Here's some of the important markers, the important stats. And then again, if scrambling percentage is one of them, then maybe myself from a coach's perspective can say, well, this is what I see with players at this level. Here's how you can improve.
All right. So yeah, if you're kind of thinking that way, that's pretty easy. So kind of the big separator, this is GameForge terminology. We talk about offense, defense, and noise. So offense is your ability to make birdie, right? Is there an offense, like, can I take advantage of a game plan or a golf course where I can make birdie? Defense is, can I save par when things are not going exactly to plan? Well, they might be going to plan. Maybe par is our goal for the hole. And then noise would be just weirdness. So inside of GameForge, par, birdie, bogey is traditional scoring. That is 85 to 95% of all scoring, depending on what level you're on, are going to come from par, birdie, bogey. The other is noise. So we have good noise, which is eagles, and we have bad noise, which is doubles, triples, quads. I don't know what it's called, coach, but I walked away with a 12. Oh, okay. So we have different, like, we have noise as well. So if you really want to start breaking it down, I would say on the offensive level, the Division One athlete makes more birdies traditionally, so they can get away with more mistakes. So if you think
Sure.
of kind of the top player in the top 10 players in the country on the Division One level are going to be making close to four birdies on average. The average collegian male is making about three. The average female collegian's making about 2.5. So that's kind of how they make birdie. Then on the other side, it says, all right, what do bogeys look like? Well, that top 10 male is going to be making about 2, 2.5. The average male, the average female will be making roughly right around 2.5 to 3 bogeys. So a little bit more. So I used to always coin a term, especially in women's golf. It's starting to change, but it's still there. And as well as kind of average Division One, Division Two, Division Three, bogey stick. And by that, what I mean is when we make bogey at, kind of the average collegian, we don't make enough offense. So I'm only making two birdies per round per se. So every bogey I make, I cannot erase it off the scoreboard. It just sticks, right? Where your top 10s kind of in the country are making 4 to 5 birdies, they make two or three, they erase it, and then they have some change, right? But the majority of golfers do not, they basically it sticks. So I think what we could do is we could say, all right, here's kind of, to make birdie, what does that look like? It's about greens and regulation. How many greens do you hit? Of those, how many are inside of 20 feet? And of that, what do you convert at? It's real simple, right? Opportunities, conversion rates. So what we could do is I can get you all the numbers of, we can go All American, Division One. I'm probably just going to go Division Two male, Division Three male, because kind of the All American, I mean, the average Division One player really is the cream of the crop Division Two. So you can kind of hybrid that. And Division Three, we're starting to get into the point where birdies don't matter, because Division Three, we're probably averaging 76, 78, somewhere in that category. And you know what? Birdies are only going to show up about once around. So not offense is not that big a deal on that side of it. It's just because we're just not producing that many. And then defense, we can kind of do the same thing, kind of roll through the lines and say, this is what defense is. And basically, how do you save par? When I miss the green in regulation, how often do I hit it within 12 feet? How often do I hit it within 6 feet? And what we really come to find out is your ability to hit within 6 feet becomes your scrambling percentage, right? So if I hit 50% of my shots inside of 6 feet when I miss the green, then my scramble rate's going to be somewhere around 50%. until you reach that kind of the upper echelon elite and tour player, they'll separate. So at 7 to 12, they'll start making more putts. We traditionally, as most amateurs, and don't make many putts outside of 6 feet to save par. The tour player is going to start to, they make 20 to 30% more. So they'll start making putts there. So their scramble rate will get higher. But really, what we see is all the way until about 74, whatever your P6 rate is inside of GameForge is what we call it, is your scramble rate. So
I
proximity.
noticed that. I noticed that too with my high school players. Yeah.
Yeah, proximity is huge. So it's really understanding, and again, proximity is with ball striking as well. My ability to make birdie, I have to hit it within 20 feet. Why? 85 to 90% of all birdies come 20 feet and in. So hitting greens is not good enough. It's a good standard in the fact that I can quantify ball striking, but I also have to understand my proximities. How close am I to my hole? How close to the hole am I? And then what is my conversion rate? I think we could also do some really cool stuff with dispersion rates. We have dispersion rates all the way through as well. So, all Americans gonna average about 9% for all shots. I know that's not a number you hear out there from TrackMan or from other targeting systems, but the average tour player and the all American average is 9% dispersion rate. So that's from all lie conditions, all shots. You'll start to hear crazy stuff like 5%. 2%,
No.
things like that, doesn't happen in tournament situations. Now,
Maybe
if you
if
put,
that tour player is standing on a, in a perfect lie
yeah,
and he's
you
being
put,
measured with a track man behind him, sure. I
yeah, you
mean,
put Justin
then
Rose
3%, yeah,
with
3%
an
doesn't
8 iron in his
surprise me.
hand for an hour and say, how tight can we make this dispersion? It's gonna be pretty daggone good.
Yeah. I mean, I've watched Nick Faldo literally land a ball in a bucket from 150 yards and then bounce the next one off the bucket with a track man. Yeah.
No, you put a tour player in that situation nonstop, you'll be there again. You got to remember, these are the one percenters. These are
Yes.
the best at their craft. So yeah,
Yeah.
but what we've learned, it's a 9% dispersion of all shots, right? Well, and play that's going to shoot right around 80, that number's up around 20,
Yeah.
right? So they're 10% wider. What is 10? Pretty much like at 100 yards, 10% is 30 feet. So we're getting a really, really wide dispersion. So
Yeah.
your ability to control the golf ball controls the amount of greens I hit, which in turn means my proximities, which in turn means my ability to make birdie, which now gives me, can I putt? So I think we could even
And
do some.
ties in your course management, right? I mean that, if I've got a 15% dispersion versus a 9% dispersion, my decisions are going to be a little bit different on the golf course too.
You know, it's really cool. Every finger is about 3%. We'll talk about that later.
I know we've,
So if you're starting to do laterals, so you can actually hold up fingers
yeah.
from the fairway and actually predict your dispersion rates as well. We can do that in the
Yeah,
future.
so like if you break down again, like those important stats based on, I mean, you've already done the scoring averages, so then go more into the stats. And then I like coming from the angle of this is what I see junior golfers or this is what I see junior golfers practicing. This is how I see them practicing. And
Perfect.
is that steering them in the right direction for these stats? How they practice, how they measure themselves, like you just said, the unrealistic measurements of, a parent being upset or the player being upset. Let's remove the parent. The player being upset, I had a 160 yard shot and I hit my 6 iron and they're walking to the green with their head down because it's at 25 feet. And it's like,
Good shot.
that's a great shot. I mean,
Good shot.
I know it's not to the 2 feet when you're standing on the range, sitting there hitting that 6 iron over and over again, but 25 feet with a 6 iron, like that's good. Like we can make par, we can get out of here. You might make that putt, I don't know. But again, I think the you setting the expectations, the realistic expectations, and then I could come in more from, well, this is how I see players practice and this is how I see them measure themselves. And here are some of the kind of pitfalls
Totally.
from being unrealistic, from having unrealistic expectations based on your shots and based on some of the stats that we cover.
No, I think that's a pretty easy transition there, and I think Yeah, I think no, I like that. And I think inside of training, what we've really got to hit home on is variance. Understand there's a variance to everything. I think most golfers don't understand variance enough. Like they envision their best shot they've ever hit, which technically, if it's the best shot you've ever hit, you're never going to do it again because it doesn't get any better than that. But throw that aside. You know, just understanding that within a tolerance, I'm going to be able to control a golf ball a certain way. And then as I can tighten those tolerances up, things will change. But the beauty of that is when they understand variance and tolerance, they now, when they're in a training session, they're much nicer to themselves. They have an understanding of what they're doing, and it's much easier to get them to start biting off small pieces to tighten up that variance as we go. Because, like I said, the best in the world, when they hit the green, it's about 5%. All shots is about 9%. And when the tour player misses the green, it's about 15%. So they have a tour players have big misses. 15% is pretty wide when, you know, it's three times of what they do when they hit the average, when they hit the green on average. So it's a, that's a pretty big spray for them. So again, just starting to understand that there is a variance to it. Don't fall for weekend golf, watching the best players in the world on the best weekends of their life. Maybe the only week in their life that they'll ever win a tournament. And we can talk about that in the future about the chances of actually winning a tournament. What is that and what does that look like? But you know, don't fall for that weekend glaze, you know, where that's not what happens every day. So I think, yeah, I kind of like the idea of, all right, let's take, now we've got scoring averages and understand what it is. Now, what are some of the main stats that drive that? And then how can your athlete do a little bit better train that?
Yeah, I'd like to take the angle of, you know, what I see as a coach and how I see junior golfers practicing.
All right.
Is that conducive to the information that you're going to lay out? We were just in a group session with some of my homeschool high school players. And, you know, I've got one of the kids in the group who's a little bit more technical, a little bit more analytical, and we've identified that, and that's fine. But we put noodles out, dispersion noodles for their driver. And as we were working on some things, he's kind of struggling with the driver. And then we go and play the game that I had laid out. He won the game.
Yeah.
And it was a good teaching moment because it was like, hey, you were so focused on your swing and not really the outcome and what you were trying to do, the picture you're trying to create. But the reason why I bring that up is because I put the noodles out and it was a 32-yard wide fairway. To them, they were like, that looks huge. And I'm like, guys, I just went out there and measured it. So their perception is they sit there with a driver and try to hit to a flag. And I mean, 32 yards is somewhat narrow. I mean, the
Yeah.
average PGA Tour width is 27 yards. So, I mean, it's not like I gave them a big old window, but the point is instead of him focus on his swing, he was focusing more on that outcome. And because he had that cushion, it allowed him to swing a little more freely and so on. And
Yep.
that's a perfect example right there.
Yeah, no, I think like with my son and anyone I work with, like, yeah, on the range, like I'll get them, if you know aim point, holding up fingers, you predict break. Well, like I said, each finger is 3 degree or 3%. So the average kind of a really good shot would be a two finger dispersion, kind of, you know, five fingers would you'd be getting out to a 15% miss, which would be, so if you think of the tour player, they go from two to five. That is kind of their widest dispersions, right? 15 average for big misses, two fingers for really good. Nine would be kind of three fingers, right? So basically 90% of all tour shots come within three fingers.
And I
So
remember when you showed me that. And
yeah.
so I went out and I did this with my competitive players. This was way back when. I remember you showed me.
Yeah, we've been.
And so I did that and I put up two fingers next to it. I was like, I mean, that's miles on each side.
Yeah.
Like to me, from 150 yards, it was just like, whoa, like, and so to give yourself that cushion, you know, again, and then when I did three fingers, I'm like, oh my God, like I feel like I could hit that in there blindfolded. You
Yeah.
know, it looks that big to you, right? But again, that goes back to expectations. It goes back to what we talked about at the very beginning here. It's like, here's my expectations. Are they realistic?
Yep.
Okay, they are or they aren't. And then how do you train with that?
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think, I part of training, there has to be a feedback loop. And I think where most coaches and players go wrong is there's never a feedback loop, right? I do a drill. Where's the feedback to what just happened in the drill? What did I
Practicing
learn from?
without feedback is wasting time or burning calories.
I call it exercise. And
Yeah.
if with a physique like this, I don't exercise.
Yeah, but for some people sitting there hitting a 7 iron over and over again from a flat lie on a mat,
Yeah. Exercise.
what are you doing?
Exercise.
I mean, is it
Yeah.
that physical? I don't even know if I'd call it exercise.
Well, for me, it is.
Well,
Getting off the
yeah.
couch.
You're built. Yeah.
But no, I like where this is going. So, what I'll do is, what is today? Monday. I will have for you by Wednesday kind of a mocked up presentation of that. Like kind of the high-end stats for kind of the different levels. We'll do kind of offense, a little bit of defense. I'll kick noise to the curb right now. What we'll do is I'll hold back dispersions for noise because that'll be where doubles and stuff really kind of jump up. So we'll focus mainly on birdie bogey, kind of the bigger separators from the top 10, Division One, better athletes, Division Two, Division Two, Division Three. And we can kind of break that out that way. And then what we can do, or should we just do offense? And then maybe the next video we could do defense. What do you
Yeah,
think?
you read my mind. I was kind of thinking like, why don't we start the series, obviously, talking about everything.
Yep.
Again, going over your expectations, score, and those specific stats, offense, defense, noise, but we'll focus more on the offense, and I will focus more on the offense from a training perspective.
Perfect. Let's do
Then
that.
the next video we can do defense,
Yep.
because that'll be an easy segue. We can probably bang out both. And then we can do a noise one after
Perfect.
that
Yeah, perfect. I like
with the
that.
dispersion because I like the noise. That's one of the things I talk to my players a lot. I like the noise. And again, you're spot on. It goes back to your dispersion
Yeah.
a lot of times
It
with,
really
what are you
is.
planning for?
It's ability to control the golf ball, and that's all we're trying. Truly what your golf swing is designed to do at its core is you're trying to control the golf ball. Now, it's people do it different ways, make it real pretty and whatnot, but at the core of golf, what we're trying to do is control our golf ball to get it somewhere as close to the green as we can and then get the hell out of there.
Yeah, it's
I think people lose sight of that.
controlling it as much as you can,
Yep.
right? I mean, we know that the best players in the world don't move exactly the same every single swing.
It's
You know,
back to
the
variance.
whether the face is a little, yeah, their variance, right? So their
Yeah.
variance is just a lot better than ours.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, if they don't move exactly the same every time and do everything exactly perfect, right?
How do you
It's
expect to?
how much control we have. It goes back to Ben Hogan. You know,
Yeah.
he said it. He was just trying to miss it better than everybody else.
Yep. What is it? Humans being human. Humans are not robots.
Humans
Humans
being
are
human. Yeah.
beings, and we don't
That's
do it
right.
perfect, but we are really good at doing stuff within a tolerance, if we can define that. So, all
Yeah.
right. So I think we have a good plan. I'll bust the offense out quickly. My other follow-up question for you then, Blazer, is you told me that you might be a newbie in the whiskey world. Is that true?
I just offered because I probably drink 2 to 3 times a year.
All right, that's a newbie.
And I just kind of usually drink with whatever's there.
Yeah.
But I got a little dial in on a specific whiskey. I'm gonna save
Which
that for a
one?
surprise. I'm not gonna tell you. Super surprise.
Well, if I'm gonna enjoy it with you, I gotta go buy it if I don't have it on my shelf.
I might send it to you.
Oh, all right. I like
Yeah.
freebies.
But I think, and then I kind of felt left out a little bit too.
Oh, don't
You
do
know, you
that.
guys
No.
are, well, it's like when I go
No.
out and hang out with you guys too, like,
Yeah, don't do
usually,
that.
I'm driving and everything anyway, and, just trying to be the voice of reason.
Well, Blazer, I'm gonna let you into. I just did the math on this, and it's really bad. So I went in, and my bottle collection's behind me. You can probably see some of it. I have about 100 bottles now inside of my collection. So I did the math. If you did a 2 ounce pour, it would take me 3.4 years if I had to drink every day to go through all my bottles. 3.4 year, every day drinking 2 ounces nonstop.
So it would take me two lifetimes.
Well, I don't drink that much. Here's the funny part is I don't drink that much. I'll drink in a podcast, but I'll do a little taste. I don't sit and drink very often. The
No.
misnomer is like, oh, you do this whiskey stuff, you must drink a lot. I was like, there's some I'll go weeks without truly drinking. Like I just don't it. Like I enjoy a good whiskey, but I don't need to go out and have 12 of them. So
I would.
I think it's the fun part is, to me it's like discovering a new golf shot. Every whiskey is something new. I'm like looking for different flavors, different what like. The anticipation of new to me is far more superior than me having 10 of them and just being dumb, falling off a stool. Like I'm so excited about tasting this new piece because it is funny that everyone does taste different. And if you kind of appreciate, just like every golf swing is different. Like if you can appreciate what that athlete has done to figure out how to get back to that golf ball, for a lot of these people who have never been taught, like you sit on a range and you watch some of these dudes hit balls, and you're just like, how the hell did he come up with a motor
I
pattern to
know.
do that?
It's pretty impressive
The
sometimes.
human being is spectacular. Like, and
So
then,
how did you make that whiskey?
yeah, no. And that's what, my wife laughs at me because anytime I do something, I go all in. I'm like, I'm in. Like, when I go, I go. So during COVID, I started drinking whiskey. We started first in cocktails and then slowly but surely, I got the mixers less and less, and it just ended up being just bourbon or, I really like Irish whiskey as well. But anyway, that's kind of my discovery. I'm like, well, how the hell does it taste like this? And then, I even looked at Gareth and Mark 1 weekend they were here, and I was like, when it comes out of the still, it's clear. And they're like, no way, whiskey's brown. I'm like, it ain't brown because of the distilling process. It's brown because of the barrels. And they're just like, you're lying. And like they Google search, and they're like, no way. So like, there's an entire world out there of whiskey. And so no, yeah, you let me know the whiskey type, or you can send it to me, and we will do a podcast going through. We'll talk more golf, but we'll also talk a little whiskey and see if we can ignite your passion for whiskey. Like I have, Gareth McShay is a monster now. I've
Oh
created
boy.
a whiskey monster in Ireland. He sends me more memes and whiskey stuff than anybody. And he's was the biggest beer drinker on earth. So yeah, once you get the bug, man, you got to be careful. You're gonna have, well, like I said, my shelves get smaller every week. I don't know what
Well, I
happened.
just, like I said, I just wanted to be, I thought it was cool. I liked the podcast. I like, hearing about that stuff.
Yeah.
I wanted to kind of be included a little bit and try it and just
Please
jump in
do.
and give you, just be a guest. But
Yeah,
I
no, we
did
want you more
know
than a
that,
guest. We'll get you to be a contributor.
but I did know that whiskey came out clear. And you know how I know that?
As a
I'm a certified wine sommelier and part of our, didn't know if you knew that either.
I did
So I'm a
not.
certified wine sommelier, went through it with the Master Course of Sommeliers, and part of the first certification level is you have to do spirits. So
Yes.
we learned a lot about spirits, not just wine. So.
Awesome. No, I think, like I said, where I first started my whiskey adventure and what I kind of liked, my tastes and what have just completely changed. It's like I started with the Irish whiskeys. They're all very friendly, very nice, very just like Irish people. They're very friendly, very nice, very easy to drink. And then I've kind of discovered the world of rye whiskey. I discovered bourbons, and then bourbons just span the gamut. And man, it's like I said, to me, it's the biggest playground on earth. And the fun part is I can literally do a half ounce or an ounce tasting and just be giddy and just stop there. I'd be like, cool, I'm
Yeah,
fine.
just enjoy it. I
I'm
mean,
fine.
that happens a lot with wine drinkers too,
Yeah.
where you'll start off in, one varietal or one region, and then next thing you know, a few years later, you're on the other side of the world in a completely different grape,
Yeah.
maybe even completely different color. So it can be fun. So
Yeah.
that's why I said, yeah, I know a little bit
Yeah, no.
about it. Let me
I'm in,
jump in
buddy.
and
I'll challenge.
Maybe
I'll
even
even
though I
challenge
don't
your
drink it a
knowledge.
lot, I can, yeah, but even though I don't drink it a lot, I can throw some little nuggets in there, some stuff
I'll
I do
even
know.
challenge your knowledge. I love it.
Oh
But
boy.
what I love, honestly, if you are new to it, your experiences to me will be really exciting because I'll think back to when I first started going. Like to me, my first experience was my wife and I, I think it was literally during COVID, we had Bullet, which is now I'm not a huge fan of Bullet, even though I have Bullet swag to give away to
I mean, it is what it
some of
is.
it is what it is. It's the number one selling whiskey in California. That's what it is. So I had Bullet, I had a Woodford Reserve, which is a weeded, and then I had Four Roses, which is kind of your traditional sweet bourbon. And I was
When I
like,
drink whiskey, I drink Woodford Reserve.
yes, very good. So going through the three, I was like, let's see if we can actually see if there's a difference. And we started with the Woodford. It was okay. A little too sweet for me, but it was good. I was like, okay, it tastes like a whiskey. And then we went to Four Roses, and Four Roses was just like ungodly, like just crazy amount of sweetness to it. Didn't taste anything like Woodford. I was like, well, okay. And then all of a sudden, Bullet comes behind it with that rye, because I didn't even know what rye was at the time. And I was just like, oh, that's nowhere near these two. And all I could taste was like Red Hots, the candy. Like my tongue was just like red hot, red hot, red hot. So from that point forward, I was like, oh, my world just got shook. Like I thought,
Oh boy.
when I thought of whiskey, I thought of college and really cheap, you know, like Wild Turkey 101, do a bunch of shots and drinking for
Ooh.
different reasons. But
Man,
now I,
yeah, I've got that bad taste too,
but
that
you know, the
wild
funny
turkey
part
you
is
would get is.
I circled back and had Wild Turkey 101 about 6 months ago and like literally just sipped it. That is a good daggone whiskey.
Well, that's
That's
because
a
you were
good
drinking it
whiskey.
prop. That's because you were drinking it properly, but as we know, we were probably not drinking it
Oh
properly in
no,
college.
God
I'm
no. There
leaving it
was
at
nothing I
that.
did in college that was proper. But it was really funny. I was like, oh my God, that's just a completely different experience. But no, yeah, definitely. We'll bring you on and like I said, I have no problem with it. We can even do some, you know, every couple weeks we can jump on and we got some new games we're gonna do and just make it kind of fun. But yeah, and then you need to get up here this December. Well, you can come to Ireland with us in September if you want. We're gonna do a big event in September.
I can pull off Virginia. But I will tell you this, I'm probably gonna have to do the podcast at home if we're gonna be sipping whiskey. It cannot be done here at work. I
No,
won't make it home.
that's fine. Yeah, no problem. Yeah, we'll sit on the deck, get your Zoom going, and everything will be fine. But no, yeah, I definitely don't want to pull that at work. It's not the 70s anymore.
Well, I'm about to run out here now
Yeah,
and yell
bro.
at some high school junior golfers.
Have fun with
And
that.
every time I talk to you, I learn a little something. So I can't wait to talk to them about some of those expectations. We're going to talk about 9 and 10% today.
That's a good one, man. Change their world, man. Change their world.
Yep.
I appreciate it, Justin.
Thanks, BB. I'll talk soon, man.
All right, talk to you later.
Later.